Mr. Grest, thank you for agreeing to this interview. And the first question would be probably a private question. In Latvia, we call you Peters. How would you prefer being called, Peter or Peters?
Peter, Peters, either is fine. You know, I mean, I'm a Latvian Australian, and so if people want to use my Latvian name, Peters, then that's also fine. You know, so either works.
Okay. So I think recently you have had a lot of interviews, and there have been lots of interviews with you regarding your detention, about how it has changed your life. How all these things have changed you as a journalist?
It's a very good question, actually. The fact is, I haven't done any work as a journalist since I was released. Obviously, our trial is ongoing. I'm still an accused person in the trial. I'm still a defendant. And so as long as I'm under trial, it's difficult for me to do any work as a journalist. And so I still don't know quite how that's going to affect my work. I'd like to think that it's made me more determined to do work as to hold to my professional ethics and integrity. I suspect I might be a little bit more cautious about where I work in future. But I hope not. I mean, I hope that I'd still be willing to work wherever I feel that there are stories to be done, regardless of the political circumstances. You know, I feel very strongly that about the issue of press freedom, about the need for the press to be able to work wherever there are stories to be done, because I think we need to be very careful that we don't allow ourselves to be intimidated away from reporting.
You have had an outstanding journalism career, and you have worked in many hotspots, let's say, Afghanistan, Somalia, Middle East. These are countries of different cultures, different societies maybe, and also different attitudes towards media. How it is for a Western journalist to work in such countries, and what are the biggest challenges, probably?
It's interesting. I mean, there are pluses and minuses. There are challenges and there are advantages to working as a Western journalist. The disadvantages are that you don't have the same kind of deep understanding of the way that a culture works, of the way that the society functions, and it can take time for people to develop that. And I think this is one of the reasons why it's better to be a correspondent based in a region rather than to parachute in and out of those countries. I spent more than a year in Afghanistan, and I'd like to think that over that time I started to really understand Afghanistan a lot better. And I've also spent many years covering Somalia, and similarly I'd like to, and places like, you know, Congo and South Sudan and so on. So I'd like to think that I'm starting to understand the people a little bit better. We also have a very privileged existence in a way, because we are reporting from the outside in a way that makes us, that gives us a certain amount of insulation. Local reporters who are inside those environments are always sensitive to the fact that they've got to live there and that their families are there, so that if there is any consequence to the reports that they do, it's not just themselves that are at risk, it's all of those that are around them. I've seen the way that some of my colleagues in Somalia have suffered. So many Somali journalists have been murdered in their homes, have been shot and attacked. That it's had a devastating effect on not just their ability to work, but all of their families as well. And so I think it's in a lot of respects that makes it easy for us. But a hot zone, a conflict zone, is a conflict zone, and it's always extremely tough to operate. I feel very privileged to have had those opportunities. I think it's important that we keep doing it, that we not shy away from it, because I think that we need to cover these stories so that people understand what is going on, not from the superficial reporting, not from the blog posts and Twitter feeds that we get from those countries, but from really good journalists who have the capacity to analyze and understand and make sense of what's going on.
Recent events in your life, have they somehow increased your awareness or your let's say fear of something, probably?
Well, yeah, you're talking about the murder of my colleague Kate Payton in Somalia. She was shot and killed while we were working together in Somalia, just a few feet, standing a few feet from where I was at the time. That you can't go through an experience like that without being more aware of your own mortality. That was a very, very difficult time for me at a personal level. And yes, it did make me think very hard about the value of the work that we do. There's no easy answer to this. There really isn't. I'd like to think that it hasn't pushed me away from reporting. Undoubtedly, it does have an effect. I think it has made me a lot more cautious. But it hasn't stopped me going to Somalia. It hasn't stopped me going to Afghanistan or the Middle East or anywhere else for that matter. I just think I'm much more aware of how I function, how I operate in conflict zones.
The beginning of this year in France and the tragedy in Charlie Hebdo showed us that also free and democratic societies, there is this kind of very thin red line between the freedom of speech and permissiveness between values and prejudices. Shouldn't these cases, journalists probably sometimes impose some self-restraint?
I think we need, as journalists, to respect the cultural sensitivities that of the people that we're reporting on and the places that we're around. I don't necessarily agree with the way that Charlie Hebdo characterized Islam, but I do defend Charlie Hebdo's right to do that, and I think that anyone who's involved in public discussions, anyone who has an ideology or a theory or an idea that's out there in public, has to be willing to accept a degree of cynicism and satire is a part of that. It's not always nice, it's not always comfortable, but we need to be grown up enough to have these kinds of discussions and debates. There was a similar discussion or debate in Australia fairly recently about when an Australian journalist really challenged some of the big myths around one of our foundational myths in Australia, the Gallipoli myth. And this journalist, we think of Gallipoli as presenting heroes to Australia, and this journalist was saying that actually a lot of the Australians who were there were also involved in rape and war crimes. And he's right, but the way that he did it upset a lot of people. I think, however it upsets people, we still need to have these discussions. We still need to be able to have open debates without fear of being physically attacked. Throwing words around, having arguments, having debates, that's the sign of a healthy society. If we shut that down, then I think we damage ourselves as well.
During the last year in Latvia and also many European countries, Eastern European countries, we are talking now about information war regarding the situation in Ukraine, Russia's aggression, etc. Between our colleagues, journalists, we have had pretty fierce discussions about is it even possible to be objective for a journalist, or is it more preferable to be neutral what would you suggest how would you see the qualities of journalism?
I think one of the big myths that we need to deal with honestly and openly is this myth of objectivity. It doesn't exist. I don't care how good a reporter you are, you're never objective. There is no such thing as objective truth. If you get two people standing side by side at the same event, they'll have very, very different memories, recollections of what happened at that event. Neither will be wrong, neither will be entirely right either. Every time we ask a question, it has a subjective point to it. The questions that you don't ask, you have to make choices about the questions you do ask, the questions you don't ask, the information you put in, the information you leave out, the information that you think is most important, information you think is least important. All of these are subjective choices. So objectivity is simply a myth. What we need to do is forget about trying to be objective and focus on the things that the core principles of our profession, and that is of balance, accuracy, and fairness. We need to try and keep our own political views out of it, but at the same time we need to understand that they are there. But if you can report in a way that is balanced, that what you're doing is being, that you're showing both sides of a particular conflict or a particular story, if you're fair to both sides, so that each side, even though they don't might not agree with the full outcome of the story, each side recognizes their own views as fairly represented. And if you are accurate with your basic facts, then I think you're doing your job as a journalist. It's particularly difficult when you are a journalist when your home country is caught up in a conflict. A Ukrainian journalist reporting on the crisis in Ukraine makes it almost impossible for them to ever be seen as objective reporting, because their work will be seen through the eyes of people, by people from their position. You know, if you're a Russian journalist and a Ukrainian journalist filing the same report, will have that report viewed very differently depending on whose byline is there. These are just political realities we have to come to terms with. As I said, I think we need to think more honestly than talk about objective journalism.
So now we come to your idea about this Universal Media Freedoms Charter. Could you explain a little bit more and tell about it?
This was an idea that my colleague Baher Mohammed and I had while we were in prison. We were trying to work out how we can best protect journalists who are in prison. We were thinking of some kind of law, some kind of treaty, and we realized that something that has the force of law probably isn't going to work simply because no governments are going to sign up to it. But we felt that there needed to be some other document that really worked to give journalists a universal protection, something better than the existing agreements that are out there at the moment. The idea we came up with was this Universal Press Freedom Charter, which would set out the principles and the responsibilities behind press freedom, the responsibilities that governments have to protect journalism, but also the responsibilities that journalists and news organizations have to report fairly. That may or may not be the right approach. There are a number of organizations who think we're better off trying to support the existing bits of paper, make them work better rather than coming up with something entirely new. We're still discussing this. And we're due to have a meeting on Monday to talk about ways of strategies. What is clear is that the system at the moment isn't working properly. Freedom House points out that press freedom universally is at the lowest point that we've had for the past 20 or 30 years, the lowest since records began. About 14% of the world lives in areas that have a genuinely free press. That's 1 in 7 people around the planet. Now, every government insists that it believes in free press, but if we have so few people actually enjoying it, then clearly we have a major problem and something needs to be done. We're trying very hard to find a way of doing it.
This follows up the question, do you think it will even be possible to achieve this goal? Because, if we look at the level, for example, of United Nations, well, United Nations Security Council itself has proved itself to be like toothless or something, and a few of the members are not regarded as.
Yeah. Well, this is always a problem. But just because it might be difficult or even impossible doesn't mean we shouldn't try. And even if we can't reach that goal of universal press freedom, we can do everything we can to move things in that direction. Even if we only take a few baby steps, it'll be worth it. You know, if you aim for the stars, then you might hit the moon. If you only aim for, you know, the top of the mountain, then you might not get past the first hurdle. I just think that we need to try. I agree it's difficult. Everyone points that out. I agree that there are a whole lot of political forces working against us. But I also believe in this strongly enough to think that we really need to have a go, and I wouldn't feel comfortable with myself if I didn't.
You already mentioned that the freedom of the press has decreased actually enormously during the last few years or so. I would like you to comment on situation. Let's imagine the situation that there is idea to create a supervisory commission who would, supervise public media, and the proposition is to include their representatives of political parties, representatives of biggest religious confessions, so that they will control the public media. And the main argument is that the political parties and religious confessions are the biggest representatives of society, so they can follow the moral stance, etc., etc. How do you think? How does it sound?
It doesn't sound great to me, because I think that what always tends to happen is that those groups have their own particular interests to protect, and they tend to impose a form of censorship on journalism and on journalists and reporting. That doesn't mean that their input shouldn't be valued and considered, but if we give them the power of veto, if we give them the right of direct control over what is broadcast, then I think we're moving towards the end of rather dangerous censorship. You've got to remember that journalism is not supposed to be friendly. We're not supposed to be supporters of any one particular group. We're supposed to be the awkward squad. We're supposed to be the ones that ask the difficult questions, that challenge the politicians, challenge the religious groups, that gets in the way of things. I don't think we should apologize for that. And I also think, as a society, we need to be grown up enough to be able to have those kinds of arguments without fearing that society is going to fall apart. If we give the political parties and religious groups too much control, direct control over the work that journalists do, then I think we slip down the slope of muzzling the press to the point where we can't really have those kinds of debates. That's what we do. That's what the journalism is supposed to do, where all of these forces come together, where every group is criticized and challenged and attacked. And society works this stuff out that way. I think that it's quite dangerous to place too much control or to give political groups and religious groups any kind of direct political influence, direct editorial influence over the work of journalists.